8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, and networking with all our regional FM stations, and also live on the internet at www.gbcghana.com, we say welcome to Behind the News, where we speak to the newsmakers and experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, prospecting for gold at the Elmina Beach. What next after the three-day deadline set by the Edina Traditional Council? How far have we come with addressing disability issues? Can the trot-trot be disability-friendly? What says a research finding? And then Kumasi hosts National Environmental Sanitation Conference. What new ideas will the forum offer to improve Ghana's sanitation profile? It's Behind the News, and you are live from our national studios here. And as usual, we'll be taking your text and comments on 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to our first story. To the people of Elmina in the central region, the discovery of gold at the Elmina Beach remains a divine intervention that will mitigate their hardships and improve their standard of living. Therefore, any attempt to stop them from prospecting for the mineral is seen as an attempt to deprive them of a golden opportunity. The intervention by the Edina Traditional Council and National Security to ensure that the mineral is legally mined and to protect the environment is regarded by the illegal miners as a hindrance to their prosperity. The operators are eager to hear from the Edina Traditional Council on the outcome of the appeal they made to it following an order to suspend mining activities for 3 days. Today is the deadline for the suspension of the illegal operations. What decision has the Edina Traditional Council taken so far? Behind the News is finding out about all this. But before then, we want to find out from our central regional correspondent, Kingsley Nanabuedu, the situation at the Elmina Beach. Good evening, Kingsley.
Yeah, good evening, Kingsley.
Yes, presently, what is happening at the beach?
Well, I just moved from there about 30 minutes ago, and to be honest with you, like you said, the ban on the Galamse activity there by the Edina Traditional Council and the National Security has become a hindrance to the people indeed. But of course, they are heeding to the orders by the council. I went there, people were there, all right, but there was no any sort of such activity ongoing there. I spoke with some of the youth who were just loitering around there, as to what happened when they went to the Elmina, because we, the traditional council. Because like you rightly said, on Thursday, the people, the youth demonstrated against the decision for them not to do the Galamse activity there. So the traditional council told them that today will be the deadline for them to be able, for them to take a decision as to whether they will allow them to do the Galamse there or not. So the people waited patiently till this morning. Nothing was held. So 4 o'clock, some of them marched to the place. But they, according to them, they were told that they were not complete because they are waiting for other things. They have not taken a decision on that thing yet. Then that they should go back and bring those people who led them the demonstration before, if they even have anything to tell them, they will do so. That was what the people were saying. So at the test now, they've not heard anything from the traditional council. But of course, they are also heeding to the order for them not to go engage in that activity. But what they are saying is that, for so far they are concerned, the gold in there is not so much. So they don't expect the traditional council or the national security or whoever to make sure to let them, put them aside and give it to either foreign company or whoever they will want them to come and do the activity there. They believe that it is for them, and whatever a decision that they are taking, it should be in their interest so that they can also mine the gold, the whatever little it is, so for them to also have something to do with it. So basically, that is what they are saying.
Yeah, Kingsley, we've been made to understand that it is not just the people of Edina who are mining on the beach, but they've been joined by others from elsewhere across the country.
Indeed, it's a fact. Even just this night, as I was moving away from them, most of the people that I spoke with, I wanted the indigenous, but most of them that I spoke with happened to have come from Prisia, Oda, and so on and so forth. One guy that I met, he said, as for him, he just arrived there on the day that the ban was placed on the activity. He's called Yao Nyaku. He's from Atimoda, and he came with 6 other people. And they don't even have a place to sleep there. They are just loitering around and staying in somebody's quarters, and they even told me that they've been stolen. Their mobile phones and other stuff have been stolen, but they have not even gotten anything yet as at the time that they came, because they came at the time that the ban has been placed on the activity. So they're even there stranded, and according to them, they don't even have money to even go back to PCR. So then they are waiting till the ban is lifted, so they do some small galamse before they will get money back to wherever they are coming from. I spoke with some of them too from Akutia and so on and so forth. So like you already said, most of the youth that I spoke with happen to have come from elsewhere.
Yes.
It is true that they are there, they are in the town.
They are in the town. So how are they keeping up for the others? Does that mean that perhaps any place that they can find lodging with is full now?
One of them told me, interestingly, that when they came, they even realized that the people themselves, most of them even sleep by the seashores and don't really have whatever. So they don't really mind as to where they are sleeping. What they are thinking about is that the ban will be lifted any time soon, so that they can do something within the shortest possible time to get some money, and if there's the need for them to go back, before they go back. But for now, they don't even know their fate, because some of them also claim they don't even have transportation back to where they came from.
Yeah.
So they are just loitering around, and perhaps if you have a friend, you think, well, most of them don't even know the town, they don't know anybody there, but they were informed and they heard it on radio that this is what is happening. So they moved away from, all the way from Akutia, Obuasi, and elsewhere into the town and engaging. So you can imagine what could happen if they have not eaten, if they don't have money. It means that another vice is also taking place, because the possibility of stealing, the possibility of robbery and all of that for survivor is also even high there.
Have you had any interaction with the security agencies to know exactly how they are trying to manage the situation presently?
Well, when you speak to some of them, they don't really want to talk about it. All what they are saying is that they are taking a decision as to, but for them to do illegal mining, that one, it is not allowed. But whatever decision that they will come up with, they will call a press conference or media conference for us to know whatever it is, so that we will put it across for the people to know and understand their position.
So for these illegal miners, have they demarcated the areas they are operating, or anybody goes just anywhere and then takes a section and then starts digging?
Initially, the regulation was needed seriously, because when the first time that incident broke and we went there, we realized that there were some infighting, small among them. Because when people have excavated a certain place and they don't want others to cross and so on and so forth. So that was what it was. So the ban came. But as it is now, nobody is there. They are just, you see them moving. In the afternoon, they converge there, not doing anything. But in the night, like that, as I went there, there are some few young guys moving up and down, some doing their own thing, but not necessarily doing it. You hear some of them group somewhere and discussing and talking about the need for that ban to be raised. Other than that, in fact, it will not be easy. They will not sit down for the gold there to be taken away by some people. They have certain impression. That if care is not taken, the little one that is left for them, because they believe that the white people have taken all of them away during the excavation or the dredging of the lagoon. So the little one that is left for them to, they will not sit down for white people, for them to bring some white people or some people elsewhere to come and do it and take the rest away. It should be a job for the boys there to also do.
Kinsley Nanabwed, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're welcome, Kinsley.
That's our Central Regional Correspondent on the line with us. But Nana Ediakwa is the Chief of Atonkwa and Akwamuhini of the Edina Traditional Council. We have him on the line now. Good evening, Nana. Yeah, so what decision is the traditional council taking in connection with the illegal mining at the beach?
Yeah, as I told you earlier on Thursday there was a demonstration, and then Nana promised them that he will talk to the authorities, and then within 3 days they should come for a reply. What happens is that within the 3 days, we're able to talk to the EPA. We had also a visit from the Department of Geological Survey. We were all there to take samples. So we are waiting for their report. And then, so before this report comes, we have a security agency protecting the place.
Yeah. Nana, if you can please raise your voice a little for us. But some are saying that perhaps the traditional councillor delayed in taking action because we are alerted that people have found gold, whether it is real gold or not. Is that the situation?
It came as a surprise to all of us. But later we saw that the influx of the people to the Almeida township was becoming too much. And then we also saw that they were degrading the beach. And that is the time that we invited the group to come and ascertain exactly what was going on. And then eventually, first they failed to come. It was the idea that when they come, they will be arrested. And a few of them came. We told them, yes, the mineral, we hear that you guys are prospecting for the mineral. But if you don't take time, before you finish those activities, the whole beach will be destroyed. Therefore, please stop. And then we will find out from the EPA and the appropriate agency before we would allow them to do it.
So how is the traditional council collaborating with the security to ensure that at least people keep to it? We have some information that they are just roaming, waiting for the next line of action.
Yeah, we are also very thankful to the security agency for holding up now. What we are also doing is that we're still waiting for the report to come. As soon as we receive the report, we'll have a stakeholders meeting. The youth, the district assembly, the agencies, and then we'll all find out exactly the amount of gold that is there, whether they need licenses to do it, and who will be allowed to do it. Because the argument is that if it is in a small quantity, then we would actually would wish that the youth of Almeida obtain licenses to do the mining. But if it is in a commercial quantity, then it's for the people of Ghana, and anybody with appropriate license will be allowed to mine around the place. However, we still are thinking about the environment.
Yeah. So when is it likely that you reach a decision that you can quickly call all of those involved?
Yeah, I don't want to put any time frame on this. As soon as the UCE and the Minerals Commission finishes their report, we will do well to convene a meeting for everybody to hear the next line of action.
Yeah. The information is that Edina is now agog and teeming with so many visitors from elsewhere. Is that posing any problem for you?
So far, yes, because as soon as the news went around, there was a mad rush. People from all over the country who have the knowledge of this Galamse activity moved in. But thank God, the security agencies are on the ground, and I believe they are doing their way. Again, the people have also respected the order. Nobody has actually flouted it, and we are very thankful to everybody.
Nane Diakwa, I want to thank you very much for your time this evening. We'll be monitoring the situation, and if need be, we'll please get back to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That is the chief of Atonkwain, Akwemohini of the Edina Traditional Council. Behind the news, if you are around Elmina at the moment, it means you are getting us live on Radio Central, but very nearby in Twin City Radio, you are getting us somewhere in the Western region. And you are also live on Sunrise FM in Koforidua. Behind the news, you are live on Yura Radio and Radio Upper West together with Garden City Radio. We have joining us on the line now the minister in charge of the area to talk about the issues. That is the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, Mike Hammer. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, Honorable, you've heard exactly what is going on. What is government's reaction to the prospecting of gold at the beach?
You mean the Almeida beach?
Yes.
I think that we had information about a week ago, but the first thing we had to do was to ask the Geological Survey Department and the Minerals Commission to take samples from the beach and then test them in the laboratory to determine whether it is gold or what we call an occurrence. Sometimes you have occurrences or deposits, and then it looks like gold. For example, there are some minerals that we call pyrites. Pyrites are just like gold. They glitter like gold, but they are not gold. So it was important that we had to take them through the laboratory process to establish whether they are gold before coming out to make any public announcement. So for now, the preliminary result shows that yes, there's some element of gold, but I'm sure we're getting a final report by tomorrow.
Some element of gold. So it means that people might have some justification in trying to lay hands on some of it before at least the stop work comes in. Is that right?
But you see, what is also important for us to understand that the Constitution says that every natural resource that is found on the land, the sea, and the territorial waters, and the continental shelf, and the extension to the continental shelf, it's all vested in the president, and he holds it in trust for the good people of this country. That is Article 2576. That presupposes that even though the land might be yours, but any mineral found on that land is vested in the presidency. And the exploitation of that mineral is also guided by the Constitution, that Article 2681. That shows that every transaction undertaking or contract which involves the grant of a right or concession for the exploitation of any natural resources will also have to be ratified by Parliament. So it shows clearly that the rules and regulations or laws that guide the exploitation of natural resources in Ghana. So if it is established that, yes, there is a mineral deposit and it is an ore body, which means there's a mineable deposit, then we have to go through the rules that govern the mining in this country. And these rules are, first of all, the PNDC Law 281 of 1989, and then the Minerals and Mining Act 703 of 2006. That guides the exploitation of minerals in the country.
Yeah. So, but from what they are doing, do you think people are aware that this is what the law says?
Yeah, that's why on Wednesday, tomorrow next, I'm in the constituency and I'm having a natural program. On Wednesday, I am going to Elimina with the ministry staff and then the agencies, and we'll be engaging the traditional authorities and the chiefs and the people to educate and sensitize them on what the law says about mining. We've also had preliminary discussion with the security agencies, the regional coordinating council, and the district coordinating council. We've also begin the process of engaging the authorities, the traditional authorities, and then those who are involved in illegal mining, for them to understand that the rules and laws that guide the exploitation of these natural resources. So hopefully when I get there on Wednesday and we meet them, we'll roll out a program to continue with the education and sensitization. And I believe that when they are fully educated, we'll take them the process. That is, if it is established that there is ore body, which is a mineable deposit, and it is established that this can only be to be more economical to do small-scale mining, we will take them through the process of applying for a license.
Yeah.
And ensure that they get a license to mine them in an environmentally sustainable manner. Because you also have to understand that there are other environmental protection laws, EPA laws, that's what guides mining in this country. That also has to be followed through.
Yeah. So, Mr. Hamai, it means that, assuming that it is proved, it means you are going to organize all these ones who are involved in the mining presently to do it the right way. Is that what we have to understand?
We'll organize them into associations and take them through the process of obtaining small-scale license, because they contribute significantly to the mining industry and by extension to the economy in this country.
Yeah. The concern of some of the young ones earlier on spoken to by our correspondent is that sometimes when certain things are discovered in such areas, the real people do not benefit. So that is why they have to go in quickly and get what they have to get before even any other person comes in, organization comes in. Is there an assurance that really they will be catered for so that they will rest assured that the environment is also important?
Yeah, I think that you also recognize that before any mining operation takes place, the community is involved. There are stakeholders consultation. There's even a public forum where the stakeholders are consulted so that their concerns are taken on board. So if there are issues that bother the community, it is at this public forum that it is ironed out so that the mining process takes place in an atmosphere where the mining company purchases its social license and engages the community. But the truth is that, yes, there have been instances where these mining companies have not been able to purchase their social license. For that matter, it has led to a lot of structural tension between the communities and the mining organization. Yes, you know, as much as possible, we try to advise these companies, to ensure that they engage the community on a continuous basis, so that at the end of the day, you have a win-win situation where the community benefits from the corporate social responsibility and from some other infrastructure that by the contract that has been signed between the government and with the committees and concerns on board, you know, they're able to discharge their social obligation. So at the end of the day, the community is also happy. It's happy. When that is done, there is less agitation within the community. But granted that we still have to look at the new mining law, so that we also look at community engagement. As it stands now, the Mineral Development Fund, which is just an administrative directive, it's not been planted in any legal infrastructure. Now, it doesn't really give room for localizing the benefits to the mining community. So what has led to a situation where communities that mining actually takes place sometimes and do not benefit much from the mining activities. So once we plant this Mineral Development Fund in the right legal infrastructure, which we are going to take through Parliament, the new Mineral Development Fund, once that is passed, there is a provision for establishment of local development committee. So the royalty payment that goes to that assembly, the 5% that goes to assembly, 25% that goes to traditional authorities, the stools, and the 20% that goes to traditional authorities will be restructured in such a way that a chunk of food will go to the local development committee that will be used to develop the community in which the mining takes place. So they don't have a situation when any mining activities actually deprive people living in the community with their means of livelihood.
We want to thank him very much. The Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, Mike Hammer, was on the line with us, and as I said, on Wednesday there will be meeting and we will be following up and also getting you the relevant information in relation to what happens at the Elmina Beach. Some text messages we have here. Ali Wahab Du is saying the people of Elmina should think of the hazards involved before the money. And Stephen Kraft from Edna, gold or no gold, Elmina will survive. So measures should be put in place to save Elmina from people with different behavior from all walks of life. Behind the news, you are live on Volta Star Radio. If there is something that Ghana can be commended for, it is the country's ability to put in place necessary laws to tackle problems it is confronted with. On many occasions, however, concerned observers have questioned how people comply with the available laws. Act 715 was passed in 2006 to ensure that persons with disability are helped to live their lives just like any other person. 5 years on, questions continue to be asked as to how the Disability Act has been made to work. To what extent has it succeeded in removing barriers? What about its promotion of inclusive development? As International Day of Persons with Disability was observed, the fact still remains that many PWDs are still marginalized, frequently unemployed, and also excluded. They are also largely voiceless in matters that affect them. To examine how the Disability Act is working in some districts, the Institute for Democratic Governance, IDEG, together with St. Ghana and Christian Aid, carried out an accessibility audit on social facilities in the educational, health and transport sector. What were their findings? Very soon, we'll be picking it directly from Kojo Imprim, who is with IDEC. But for now, we have joining us Samuel Buedu Ashrifi of the University of Ghana, who was on the research team, as to what struck him most as they went round. Good evening, Samuel.
Good evening.
Yes, you went round during the research, talking to people, picking their views. What was so unique during this audit?
Yeah, one of the things that was so unique was about the awareness. We found out that most people are not aware about the act, and some were also aware. But the issue is that when you look at the education sector, most of the heads of unit use their discretion. Some will say that, fine, if you have a PWD child, take him to the special school. And the issue is how many people can afford this? And due to that, when you look at Greater Accra like this, parents are able to afford it. They have even gone to a extent of having an association for parents who have PWDs, children. But in the rural areas, most parents keep their children in their rooms, lock them up, feel very sad that maybe the society looks upon them as being cursed or whatever. And one thing that struck me was that when we asked a lady who has a disabled child, that is he aware of the act and is he aware that there is a percentage that the assembly was supposed to give up for the catering of such people with a disability, and he said he's not aware of it. So the whole thing is as if the whole issue is centered in Accra here. But when you look at the rural areas, it's not that way. Most people don't know it. So looking at it, it means we have to do more education in the rural areas so that they will get to know, and then through that we could save our brothers and sisters who are living with these deformities.
So does that mean that in responding to disability issues, a lot of the people you spoke to did not know what to do or did not know about the law and what it says?
The issue is this. You see, in Greater Accra, for instance, most of the people are aware because of the electronic media. In the rural areas, it's not like that. In the rural areas, it's not like that at all. Because when you look at the percentages in the rural areas, it's very, very low.
Yeah. You went to various facilities, schools, hospitals, and all. How did it work out? Which area showed a higher level of knowledge and compliance?
When you look at the schools are doing their best to comply with the act. The schools are doing their best to comply with the act. But looking at the health sector, they are also somehow okay. But the worst is the transport sector.
Hello? Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I know you have a few recommendations. You've mentioned part of it, that to work much more in the rural areas. Do you think that perhaps with what you found out, then it means the urban areas need no attention again?
Yeah, looking at it, it seems the urban areas, the awareness is very high. So if the print or the electronic media would do more sensitization in the rural areas to go a long way to help. If the assembly is able to team up with the local authorities to give them more education on the PWD Act, I think it will go a long way. Because, you know, we all live in communities and we see PWDs around. But it's as if nobody cares when you look at the rural areas because of the stigmatization. If the electronic media will do a lot of education on these issues, it will go a long way to help.
So you think the media has not done much to help?
Yes. As compared to other issues, when a politician makes a statement, we spend weeks, months debating it. But this is an issue that goes a long way to help all of us. But the media don't pay much attention in that area.
Well, so perhaps we'll see how we join some of these issues as we go on. But talking about disability issues, we have an inclusion officer, that is the social inclusion advisor at Sight Savers International, Gertrude Sefuame, joining us on the line to look at how we've performed so far in working with the Disability Act. Good evening, madam.
Good evening.
Yes, how do you evaluate the progress made since the Disability Act was passed?
We have a long way to go in realizing the impact of the Disability Act. There are some good legislations there, but as of now, it has not specifically been implemented. There has been a Council on Disability which was established to coordinate and supervise activities in the improvement of persons with disabilities. But unfortunately, it's not been very vibrant. Its resources are not to the expectations, and support to the disability movement is also not that strong.
Yeah. And Tegeti, if you can please reduce the volume on your set for us. We are getting a little feedback on the line so that it will be much clearer. Behind the news, you are live on Radio Savannah up north. Yes, if you can please go on.
Okay, yes, so I was saying that there's a lot to be done, particularly by government, but also by every Tom, Dick and Harry. For instance, the Disability Days team is together, I've even missed it now, but I talk about how we can all together build and develop, including persons with disabilities. And therefore, while the government has its role, individuals, appearance, individuals as employers of agencies and transport owners, media, everybody has a role to improve the quality of life for a person with disability, and for that matter, for everybody in the country. Because when we contribute, when ours are improved, everybody benefits. It's not only the person with disability who benefits.
Yeah. And Tegeti, I'll be coming back to you, but please hold on the line as we try to find out precisely the research findings. Could you imprim a programs officer with IDEG is on the line. Good evening.
Good evening, Kingsley, and good evening to your listeners.
Yes. Can you tell us the specific districts you worked in?
Let me begin by saying that in line with Institute for Democratic Governance mandate of championing just and prosperous society in Ghana, and also under the program that we did this study, which is called Governance Issues Forum, it seeks to empower citizens to effectively participate in both national and sub-national level development and planning. So where we did the research include, for example, the Shaman Ejimakwa in SM district, in Ho, in New Jabin, in Powasa, Second Itakrade. This is where we did the research on accessibility at 715206.
Yeah, and what were the key findings?
Yeah, I think largely what we found was that there's some awareness of people with a disability at 715, but when it comes to the extent to which local authorities are complying with the provision that has been clearly outlined in the act, it's very weak. Most people that we interview from education, from health and transport sectors do not have policies in place that clearly talk about how they are mainstreaming disability issues into development planning. And of course, then they are going to allocate budget for its implementation. These were very weak in the district that we did the audit in.
Yeah. You visited health facilities, education facilities and all. For those in charge of these institutions, what was their major headache in trying to implement the Disability Act?
I think the challenge that they face is that there's little commitment on their part to really champion disability issues. In other words, to mainstream disability issues into development planning. I think we are window dressing the issue, you know, largely in this country. We seem to be talking about it, but when it comes to commitment level from both state and non-state actors to really integrate disability issues into development planning and policy implementation, is very, so that is one key thing that we find. The commitment level is not there. For example, if you go to education, where largely most of heads of institutions are aware of the policy, they are significantly, on the other hand, not doing anything at all to implement the policy itself. So that tells you that there's a clear disconnect between awareness level and also the extent to which they want to make efforts to implement the provision that have been clearly articulated in the Accessibility Act.
The transport sector offers something to chew on. What exactly were you trying to find out with the transport sector?
Under the transport sector, what we thought to do is to, one, assess the extent to which, for example, transport unions have booking policy that seek to assist PWDs in boarding vehicles. You know, that is not there. I think we had about 81% who do not have booking policies that seek to assist PWDs when it comes to boarding public transport. And also trying to see whether they have policies in place. And there's not even written policy with regards to disability issues. So that if person with disability, for example, is going from, say, from Accra to Cape Coast, there's no policy in place. Drivers mishandling him or her, and the person has to find a way to get on board. In the process of any injuries, yeah, they are being stigmatized when even they get on board. People don't want to associate with them. And also that itself is a psychological torture on their part. But this is where we are calling for local authorities, including transport unions, to really begin to have a way to bring these people on board. Then it also means that, for example, DVLA, before they could give authorization people to use transport services, they must inspect all this, that we are having vehicles that are disability friendly. People can easily get on board, they can on board, so that then we are talking about inclusive development. Because increasingly, if we are championing democracy, champion development, then it should be for both people with disability and people with non-disability. And that is where we call for a just society in Ghana.
Yeah. It is expected that perhaps for medical facilities, things will be much easier. But according to the study, 54.2% of the medical centers do not have access to ramps for wheelchair users at their entrance. Did they tell you why the situation was so?
Yes. Some of these things, for example, constructing a simple ramp, don't call for much resources to do that. And we find it to be absent in most medical facilities that we interviewed. So that clearly tells you that, as I said earlier, commitment level as to how we want to implement the provision in the Act is simply absent in most communities. And of course, how institutional heads are driving the Disability Act is also a critical thing, because it calls for direction, it calls for leadership, it calls for strong leaders to really say, we want to champion disability issues into our policies. So that calls for micro policies. You know, if we adopt individualistic approach and every institution is trying to contribute its quota to the Disability Act, then we can make a success. But if largely we just massage the issues and we say, oh, we pass Disability Act, you know, critically, since 2006 when Disability Act was passed, it took government about 3 to 4 years before the National Disability Council was inaugurated. So that tells you clearly the lack of commitment or limited commitment on the part of government to do a lot more on disability issues. And from now, from since that time, we've not been able to pass the legislative instrument that clearly gives the mandate to the council to begin to play its oversight roles and responsibilities. So we have a long way to go if you're talking about inclusive development. And inclusive development means that both persons with disability and persons with non-disability must come on board to really champion the cause of disability issues in this country.
Kojo Mprem, I want to thank you very much for throwing much light on this research findings.
Thank you, Kingsley.
Kojo Mprem is a project officer with the Institute for Democratic Governance. But we still have on the line Gertrude Fefuame. And Kathy, coming back to you, we've heard about part of the research results. And for you, how do you engage all relevant agencies and individuals to know exactly what to do and how to do it?
Thank you. Well, it gets sad that a person with disabilities has to engage for what is a right. But all the same, because just as he explained, because there's a lack of political will, we are doing our best. We, in sense of the disability movement, organizations of persons with disabilities, with their partners. So like the Ghana Federation of Disabled, it has so many other specified organizations for the blind, for physically disabled, for the deaf, for intellectual disabled, and partners like Sight Savers, DSO. What are we doing? What we're doing is raising awareness, embarking on awareness raising. We are embarking on pilot programs and projects demonstrating practical issues that are possible. So, for instance, we just talked about education. How many schools are available for the various categories of certain disabilities in the country? And therefore, with the Special Education Division and the Ghana Education Service, some of the NGOs like Sight Savers are demonstrating inclusive education where children could leave home and go to the mainstream school. Ghana Federation of the Disabled, for instance, has again discussed with VSO Sight Savers and other Standard Chartered Bank to demonstrate what it is for employment as an example. Because, like yesterday, it came out that when you have a disability, it's the first way of discriminating you from gaining employment. They look at the disability, they don't wait to see the capacity and the capabilities you are bringing on board. And so very few of us are working in desired places. I think one key area that many people have been working is at the teaching service. But even now, that is also becoming difficult. But then, should every person with disability be either a self-employed in a very limited, small way because bank will not give you loans, or will you all be a teacher if you really didn't want to? It's good to be a teacher. What about if you didn't? So what is happening to corporates? What is happening to the other government institutions? How many people are there? And these are what some of the programs for the disability movement. Then what is also happening again is the people at the rural areas, what we call the community-based rehabilitation program. And again, the disability movement and their partners, local and international, are engaging in community-based rehabilitation where either children or adults are exposed to skills within their communities that will enable them to be self-employed. So if it's a farming community, then you are not necessarily have to be brought to Accra to learn basketry when nobody is going to buy in your community. But you are assisted to learn farming, which crops, get some engagement, because you know that most farmers will do a crop and will do a trade, and the family sensitization, the policy. Then the awareness raising is at all levels, district and national. Why is it that government appointees do not have many persons with disabilities? Why shouldn't be a rule that when government is appointing to the district assembly, there must be among the females a female with disability and among the males a male with disability as a genuine togetherness of development? It doesn't happen. There's so much lobbying that has to go on, again, with disability movements and their partners before you might find people standing in for election or being appointed to the district assembly to be part of the policy movement and discussion. How many boards, commissions, committees that have been set in the country, apart from the Council on Disability, that has certain disabilities represented? Does it mean that I don't have any capacity to contribute? Is very important that we need to address.
Well, we'll continue now on the line there. It's behind the news, and you are live across the country and also live on the internet. Radio BR in Sunyani is where you are listening to if you find yourself just around there. And you are also on Garden City Radio. Ajayiwa, thank you for letting us know that you are also getting us live in Tamale at the moment. We move on to our next story. Has Ghana as a country not organized enough forums to tackle environmental and sanitation challenges? Well, some people may argue that there is still the need to trade more ideas to bring the country's sanitation to appreciable standards. It is in this regard that Kumasi will tomorrow host a 3-day National Environmental Sanitation Conference. But what new things are we expecting from the Kumasi Forum? Joining us on the line is Na Demedeme, the Acting Director in Charge of Sanitation and Environment at the Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development. Good evening, sir. Hello, Na Demedeme. I guess we have a little challenge with that line. We'll try to get back quickly to him. Before then, we are taking this quick break. Behind the news, you are live and some of your tests here. When one buys a vehicle from a company and goes to register it, how does the DVLA ensure that the vehicle is disability friendly? Odre from Madina is posing that question. And Andrew Manga, Galamsey operators must not forget the dangers involved in illegal mining activities. They should seek government support. And I have the indication that Na Demedeme has rejoined us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, good evening.
Yes, the question has been posed. Tackling sanitation, do we really need another conference?
Well, conferences are important in whatever we actually want to do. But basically, it's a platform where various stakeholders meet to discuss challenges in the sector. You agree with me that the sector is faced with a lot of challenges and doesn't require, you know, just one agency or one person to have solutions to all of them. There are a lot of people who are doing their bits and pieces out there, and we need occasionally to meet and see how we can, you know, share lessons on best practices, and also see how we can, you know, interact and forge ahead in finding solutions.
Yeah. So for tomorrow, what will be the focus?
Now, this is tomorrow's conference. The conference is actually starting on Wednesday, to Friday. It's a 3-day conference. And the theme for the conference is enhancing public partnership for effective environmental sanitation services. As I've indicated earlier, government cannot do it all alone. The Metropolitan Minister and District Assemblies cannot do it alone. We need partnership, and especially with the private sector. Sanitation requires huge investment, and I don't think that government of Ghana or the assemblies alone can solve that. And I think that is why we need to bring all stakeholders on board, you know, to see how we can unravel the dilemma in which we find ourselves. You know, Ghana is doing very well in the other areas in terms of poverty, in terms of good governance, in terms of water supply. But when we come to sanitation, it's like it has eluded us. And sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where we can't just understand why some of these things can really not be addressed.
Yeah, but we have been told at the recent conference in South Africa that Accra received thumbs up for its efforts. Does that mean it's a bleak situation if we are getting some commendation?
Yes, we're not doing badly, as I said. If you look at the city of Accra and compare to other cities, especially in Africa, we're doing well, but we are also short of other areas. But if you look at basic sanitation, access to improved latrines and all that, we're not doing very well at all. And I think that is an issue that we need, and it will be addressed strongly at the conference. The MDG, the Millennium Development Goals, expects that by 2015, 54% of Ghanaians will have access to improved latrines. As we speak now, the coverage is just 14%. And we have just 4 years to go. And you and me would agree to the fact that if we don't do something dramatic, 4 years, I don't think that we can meet this goal. they normally would term Ghana as totally off track in meeting the MDG goals.
On and sanitation.
So, yeah, on basic sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
And at this conference, we're going to launch, you know, some key sanitation drives that you know, will accelerate our effort towards the MDG goals.
Yeah.
One is a 5-year drive towards sustainable sanitation in the by the year 2015. And the other one is also launching the Millennium Accelerated Framework, you know, for sanitation. And these are efforts towards, you know, coming on track and also making progress towards the MDG goals. We can afford to lag behind, you know, as compared to the efforts that other countries have made. And I think that we need to take some of these things seriously.
And now please let me hold you briefly as I go to the other line. We have Edward Nbai, Waste Management Expert, joining us on that line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How do you see this conference really assisting the effort towards making us better, moving from 14% to the 54% or perhaps even closer to 100?
Thank you, and good evening to your discerning listeners. I think that we have the potential of achieving results. But what we need to do is not to look at sanitation. When we talk about sanitation in a certain context, we are looking at toilets. Let me be very blunt in this matter. Because when we're looking at environmental sanitation in its totality, it's different from when we're looking at sanitation as a terminology presented by some other institution. Now, if we are looking at toilets, and we are looking at access to decent sanitation, what is it that we are describing from our social, from our cultural perspective? I think that is where we are not getting the issues very correctly. And so the issue of 14% access to decent sanitation is in itself a little bit contemptuous. Now, if you go to areas where you have compound housing arrangements and you have a toilet in that compound, it is considered as a shared facility. And for that matter, access is downgraded. I don't really think that is a very, very true issue. Now, if you are talking about public toilets, that's a different matter. If you have shared facilities in compounds, which we describe as shared facilities, and for that matter, people do not have access to sanitation, decent sanitation facilities, I think that we need to generally review that. But we are doing this again in the international context. I mean, somebody is setting the parameters, and we would have to conform to these parameters. And I think that is where we have a very serious challenge.
Yeah, but we are talking about sharing best practices at this conference. What do you think some will be for this country?
Well, the best practices is to look at, in our natural in our context, what are the best practices? And then we can move there. I'm not saying that we cannot learn from what other best practices have occurred elsewhere. But I'm saying that we also need to look at our sociocultural perspective and put it right.
Well, since the conference is coming on, we'll get time to be looking at these issues much more in the course of the week. But I want to thank you very much, Edward Nbai, for your time. Now, you are still on the line, and we are asking, he said, sometimes we look at our sociocultural practices. Do we take it into consideration when we are considering some of these issues? Hello, Nademedeme. I guess we lost him on that line. It's behind the news. As we try to reestablish contact, we have joining us on the line now, Amakudom Ajman, an environmental journalist. Good evening.
Good evening, thank you.
Yes, so much has been done in the area, so much said about it, but sometimes when evaluating, we are told that there is still so much to be done. What do you think has gone wrong?
Well, I think that we need to involve all the various actors who would help us, you know, to resolve these problems within the sanitation sector. Even as I follow the discussion, I realize that probably what we are missing is also the role of engineers, civil engineers, because we don't see that aspect, you know, coming up regularly. We keep talking about people having toilet facilities, this facility, that facility, and yet we don't see the role that the engineers are playing. Now, when you go to some of the mega cities across the world, engineers have played a very vital role in helping, you know, to maintain sanity as far as sanitation issues are concerned. I am wondering what our engineers are doing. And I just hope that this conference coming on in Kumasi will look at the role of engineers. What are our engineers doing? They need to sit up. Now, I went to Lagos recently, the Lagos Waste Management Authority, and I was impressed. I was really impressed because in 1993, when I visited Lagos, Lagos was engulfed in filth. But now, just a month ago, I visited Lagos, and the entire filth is cleared from the streets. And, you know, I was really impressed. And then what impressed me most was the fact that Lagos Waste Management Authority has employed civil engineering techniques to address some of these problems. Even though they are not, it's not too much, but what they have done is good. They have a very simple system designed by a female engineer that was impressive, and she is manning the structure. So you have a situation where their vehicles go in to bring the refuse from all over to their place, and it is compressed. So what happens is the compressed refuse is then sent back to the refuse dump, so you don't have it scattering all over the place.
Yeah.
They have also sunk wells in the heaps that is actually tapping, you know, these gases. We talk about these poisonous gases, especially methane.
Amma, you are raising a lot more issues that we certainly will be touching on in the course of the week as the conference goes on. But for now, because of our time, we have to leave it here. But Nademedeme, giving you the last word, at least you see the sort of suggestions coming up. Are you incorporating all these? I guess there's a little bit of a problem on that line. But that is where time will permit us to get to for today. We want to thank you so much for being out there. Ose Balodi was at the controls for us. On behalf of the rest of our team, Christopher Sidu, Edmund Tete, Bright Agama, and Ibrahim Asari, my name is Kingsley Obinchere.